From ESPN NASCAR, Bob Pockrass joins us. Bob, what's going on this morning?
Not too much. How are you guys doing?
We're doing awesome. I'm actually down here in Florida going to the Daytona 500 on a Sunday. Is this going to be a wreck fest? I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, watching Talladega, the second Talladega race last year, and what, there was like eight cars at the end that had a chance to win the race. Everybody else was wrecked. With as easy as these cars are being spun around without being touched, could this happen again?
Sure. It's, you know, from what you've seen this week, the cars are unstable, especially some different rules this year that have the cars lower to the ground. You know, the drivers are not confident in these cars yet in the draft. The one thing that could keep more cars at the finish this time than Talladega is the fact that drivers are so unsure of their cars, they might not take as many risks early in the race. But I expect the last 30 laps to be pretty darn crazy.
Well, we saw in the shootout that Chevrolets, the new Camaros, they don't exactly line up like the old ones did when it comes to bumping each other to the lead. The front bumper and the rear bumper aren't quite as flat and square, and it certainly don't fit like Legos like the old ones did. Is this something that's going to be addressed, or is it just something everybody has to deal with and see who's a better racer?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing that they can do about now, and they think it'll help them at other tracks. So maybe they give up a little bit here. Look, you can talk about trying to help teammates and help people of the same manufacturer, but you're going to help whoever can help you get to the front. And whether it's your best friend or your worst enemy, you've seen a lot of strange pairings at Daytona when it comes right down to it.
So which version of Daytona are we going to see? Is it the long, railway car lineup of people? Is it the 2 and 3 car packs? I mean, when you look at what we've learned from the shootout and the truck race and all the other time that these guys have spent on the track over the last couple of weeks, which version do we see?
You're going to see, after each restart, potential of some wrecks. And then about 10 or 15 laps into the run, you're going to see them get lined up. And then with about 10 laps to go in each stage, they'll get back to double file and potentially more wrecks. And then the last 30 laps, that's when guys really, that's where they get really brave, and they're not the most smartest people in the world because they see that Daytona 500 trophy and plays with their mind.
Well, hey, write it down. If Bob Pockrass says it, it's going to happen. I've never heard a more thorough examination of how these laps are going to break down from the most respected writer, reporter in the garage. So write it down.
Oh, Bob, we see some of the young guns again starting to surface early in the season. I mean, Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott, win their qualifying races. Are these two drivers guys that we can watch this year? I mean, they were both in the playoffs last year. Blaney got a win. Chase Elliott has yet to get that first official race win. Could this be the year that these guys, kind of rise up and maybe be a little bit more dominant?
I think so. It's their, third full-time season, out there. So they have that experience of going through kind of rigors of a 38 race schedule, so they're used to that. They know all the tracks, but they still gotta get the job done. Ryan Blaney's an in-house car now at Penske, that could help. And then I think Chase Elliott and his team just have to kind of get over that hump of there's a big difference between finishing second and winning a race. But, if Chase wants to ask anybody for advice, he go ask his dad. I think his dad finished second 8 times before he won his first race. Chase is just at 7.
All right, well, before we get back to other people who can win the race, Danica.
Are you saying she can't win, Mike?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she can't win. And, there's not a long history of winning. I'm curious, this sort of farewell tour with the two race schedule at the Daytona 500 and at Indianapolis, I mean, how is that playing out live and in person down there in the garage? I mean, I don't know. This isn't like the retirement of a great legend. I mean, let's be honest. What is this all about, and how is it being received in person?
That's a great question, Mike. I think it's I think it'll be very different here in Daytona than it will be in Indy in May. I think, you know, Indianapolis is where she kind of made her name. She has, you know, a ton of fans there. And I think people will maybe expect more out of her there, you know, driving for Ed Carpenter Racing. So I think that will be, that'll be a little bit more, I would say, you know, kind of in the garage than in the paddock, that they'll kind of embrace it here. I wouldn't say that it's been totally embraced. You know, it came together so late, you know, just the last few weeks. The team didn't even have time to get a car ready so that she could do the exhibition clash last week. So, obviously she hasn't won. She's raced 190 times, seven top tens. We have a story coming out on ESPN.com later today talking about, you know, maybe the hurdles that she faced. And, you know, look, a lot of IndyCar drivers didn't exactly have great results here in NASCAR. So, you know, I think people respect her for what she tried to do, and people respect her and handling the spotlight and everything and trying. But, you know, you're not going to see kind of the outpouring of emotion that you've seen for the retirements the last few years of drivers who've won a lot of races and, you know, kind of made their names in stock car racing.
Yeah, I feel fairly certain that Ashley Judd will welcome her back to IndyCar and the best drivers in the world. I mean, give me a break. Last thing about Danica, this has to be good, though, for her book and her DVD and her fitness line and all that. I mean, could this be something that helps launch her into – it doesn't seem like she wants to go into broadcasting. So is this something that's going to launch the next phase of her career?
I think what it does, Mike, is that it allows her to go out maybe a little bit on her own terms, right? Rather than saying, well, you know, this was her last race was at Homestead with a team that she struggled with and she couldn't get sponsorship and see you later. Instead, you know, she's got, you know, GoDaddy behind her for these two races. They're the two biggest events kind of on a motorsports calendar in the U.S. throughout the year. They are the events where she's, you know, made her name. You know, she's finished third in the Indy 500 before. She's finished eighth in the Daytona 500 before. So it just seems more kind of a right way, I would think, for her to go out rather than, you know, with maybe more sour taste at Homestead.
Much she won in Japan.
That's true, but I think everybody knows her. I think people know her more from Indianapolis, and I think that's where she gained her most respect as a race car driver. You know, one of her first times there, she was attempting to qualify. You saw that car twitch, and she was able to save it. And from that point on, people felt like, you know, hey, she can handle speed, and she has the potential to do great things.
Again, we're talking with ESPN NASCAR's Bob Bakras. And Bob, you know, I talked about Blaney and I talked about Chase Elliott. Over at Hendrick Motorsports, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic with you have Chase Elliott in his third season. You got two new guys in Alex Bowman and William Byron. And you've got the seven-time Jimmy Johnson, but he hasn't even come close to finishing half a race yet. So, you know, how are those young guys over at Hendrick and Bowman sitting on the pole and William Byron going to play out this season, do you think?
Well, I think Jimmy has the luxury of a little bit more experience. And, you know, it'll be an interesting dynamic with Jimmy having, probably about 18 years – yeah, probably about 18 years on the rest of his his teammates. So, this weekend is just so different than any others. And I think what will happen is that those guys will race this week, and then they're going to have to lean on Jimmy to learn about how to handle a season and how to handle, you know, the ups and downs. Because, you know, for some – you know, Alex Bowman has handled those. But for William Byron, you know, that's going to be the biggest question. how does he do when he has a 15th place car? And that's where he's going to have to lean on Jimmy for a lot of help.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Hendrick Motorsports has always done better, one of the many things they've always done better than everybody else, is share information behind closed doors. You know, those four cars, when they got to the four cars, you had guys owning each other's cars. I mean, they had a lot to benefit from. Does that continue? Is it so ingrained in the organization that continues regardless of who the guys are in the seats?
Well, what's changed, Mike, you know, first off, do you think Chad Janaus really gave all his information?
No.
Okay. All right.
Never.
He's like Bill Belichick with his assistant coaches. There's always some secret sauce he doesn't give them the recipe for.
All right. Well, Hendrick has actually changed a lot over the last year. They used to have two teams in one shop and two teams in another shop. Now they're, because of kind of the way Gibbs have done things and some of the other teams have done things, they're manufacturing cars much more similar now. All four crew chiefs are in the same building now. You know, they've gone from crew chiefs dictating how their cars are built specifically for their drivers to a more common fleet. And the hope is obviously that it's easier to, when you have struggles like they have the last couple of years. Look, they won 9 races in 2015, and then they've won 9 races since then. So they're like, we can't have each team going down separate paths. And this seemed like the best time with a group of young drivers to now have more common cars. And if they have issues, that they can really make changes quickly to all four instead of having, you know, one car seem to be kind of a company car, or two cars be the company cars, and the two others looking like they came at it somewhere else. Mm.
So, Bob, when we come down to it, I mean, let's throw the four super speedways out of the equation. What's going to happen with, you know, the different manufacturers? I mean, we know the Chevy's rolling out the new Camaro this year. Toyota had a good car last year. Ford's now the oldest. The Fusion's now the oldest model out there. What are we going to see when we get to a lot of these other tracks? Are we going to see the Chevys really start to take over because of this new body style in terms of downforce and drivability?
I don't think they're going to take over. I think Toyota was pretty far well ahead. But if you remember last year, Toyota wasn't ahead in week 2 or week 3. It took about, if your name wasn't Martin Truex Jr. and you were driving a Toyota, you were pretty darn frustrated up until, you know, late May, early June. So, you know, I think you're going to have to give the Chevy some time to see if it will be successful and how successful. And then Ford's going to have to wait till next year when they get bring out a new body to the Cup Series.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Ford reacts to this. I mean, I still think that they have the dominant. They probably still have the fastest car at the super speedways with this setup. And I think what you're going to see, you know, what you saw the other night was you saw the three Penske cars get to the front of the pack and nobody could touch them. I mean, could we see this again, whether it's the three Penske cars getting up there, whether it's Joe Gibbs cars getting up there? I don't know with the younger talent at Hendrick, if we're going to see, you know, more than maybe Jimmy Johnson and Chase Elliott be able to run up front. But is this something that could happen if teams get their cars up front? Could they be tough to pass?
I think it's going to be tough to pass no matter what, no matter whether it's three Fords up front, no matter whether it's three Toyotas up front, or whether it's a Ford, Toyota, and Chevy up front. It's going to depend on drivers, making bold moves and needing some help, crossing their fingers and getting some help. So, you know, look, you could very well see, you know, the Penske teams break out, the Gibbs teams break out, but still, so I would say, so unpredictable. But the one thing is that as we said earlier, the drivers, you know, their mindset changes, I think, in about the last 30 laps of this race. So they'll look for teammates, but I don't think they're going to rely on teammates.
All right, Bob, speaking of bold moves, it's just you and I. Just you and I talking, okay. Nobody else is listening. Who wins the Daytona 500? Who wins the championship?
All right, I'm picking Chase Elliott to win the Daytona 500. He's been the lovable loser long enough, right?
Yes.
in this series, and he nearly won this race last year before running out of gas. For the championship, I'll go with Kyle Larson. you know. Oh,
Jeff Owens will be happy. That's Jeff Owens' man crush.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I just, you know, I think it's, when you talk about breakout, you know, he had several wins last year and just think that he's set up to win the championship. But I will say this, you know, we ran some of Dale Jr.'s picks on the site earlier this week. He's picking Joey Logano to win the Daytona 500. Hmm. Do you know why?
No.
Because Logano has Junior's old former spotter TJ Majors up on the roof now for him, and he thinks that could make the
difference. It's all about the spotter. Okay.
All about the eyes on the roof.
All right. Well, Bob, man, we always love talking to you, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. We could have Wreckfest. We might have a bunch of just guys riding around and hanging on for dear life until the last 15 or 20 laps. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Sounds great, guys.